CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution, my guide on the sanctions visited upon Russia for its aggression in Ukraine and its bad acting these last 10 months. The oil price cap most recently, Michael, for months said, watch what happens. December 5th. Well, we're watching, and my goodness, the results are immediate. Michael, a very good evening to you. The headlines suggest that Russia's losing an enormous amount of revenue in the revenue stream now, but somebody's making money. Who's that, Michael? Good evening to you.
Oh, the middlemen are making money because the price cap means that the Russians cannot sell oil over $60 per barrel. They give huge discounts to India and China and Turkey and other countries which are buying this oil in the third world. And the Indians are ahead of everyone, very entrepreneurial. Suddenly, if you look at the world market, the exports from India of gasoline, petrol to fuel cars, increased almost 2.5 times, 142%. Where do they get it? They buy Russian oil. The refinery is working 24/7 around the clock, producing gas which they don't need. They don't need the oil, they don't need the gas, but they resell it. So they're making a lot of money, buying oil at discount at $53, $52 per barrel, and selling gasoline at world market prices. It's a huge business, and I congratulate them. It's all legal. It's all legal. It's all perfect. It's all clean. It's all above board.
And we can suppose that other countries or other independent operators see this opportunity. Where do they get the tankers? Are they just floating out there ready to be rented?
Actually, there are lots of decommissioned tankers. They are not good for many trips, but they are all right for a few. And they were sort of rotting in junkyards for years anywhere in Canada, in the United States. Now they're on the market, but the problem is with insurance, with all other things. But so far it works, and suddenly there is a good business. If you have a decommissioned tanker and a decommissioned tanker in your backyard, sell it.
And so the European Union and the U.S. and NATO that visited these sanctions upon Russia, this is okay with them. They don't mind people making money on the sanctions.
On the contrary, they welcome it because this means that there is a market for discounts. The Russian oil is selling at huge discounts, $27, $30 per barrel. Even a good quality oil from the Pacific part of Russia, from the Pacific Ocean, is selling under Brent. And so this is very good because now the Russian budget gets fewer revenues. And the third world operators are profiting. It's fine.
The frozen funds. In February, before the attack on Kyiv and other cities in Ukraine, Russians rolled across the boundary, the territory. Michael explained to me that the European Union, NATO, would move to freeze Russian funds. They couldn't get access at the U.S. banks. And they couldn't get their money out. And it was billions and hundreds of billions of dollars. I puzzled at the time, would anybody in the Kremlin go along with this war knowing they were going to lose all that money? Well, now, according to the headlines, the Russian Central Bank has finally decided to come to the opinion that Michael came to 10 months ago. Russian Central Bank admits it will not be able to get back assets blocked abroad. It's gone. Now, Michael, that's $300 billion, $300 billion. Euros, it's more in dollars.
Yeah.
There's speculation that the European Union, that NATO, that the U.S. wants to use this to rebuild Ukraine. Do you find that a credible solution?
Well, there will be lots of legal hurdles, but it's manageable because no one expected this war to last for almost a year. And so the assets were frozen with no thought what to do with them later, because there would be some peace negotiations and it will be decided. But now the war lasts, there is no end to it. And so they came back and started to look. We're talking about $388 billion It's a lot of money, which are in U.S. treasuries and British pound securities and European Union government bonds. And so this has to be done something about it. And the lawyers are talking about it. I spoke several months ago with Paul Wolfowitz, the former president of the World Bank. He was kind of one of the pioneers for a longer-term solution, that this money has to be confiscated as a result of war and provided to the victim of the war, to Ukraine. But of course, there will be all sorts of, it will be in the courts. It will be in the courts, it will be in the arbitration courts, it will be in the European courts, but eventually it will be done. It will be confiscated.
The president or the leader of the Russian Central Bank is a red-haired, a middle-aged woman named Nyabolina. You tell me that she has done a very good job, and I believe she tried to quit right away, but she was told she can't quit. She's done a very good job of maintaining an impossible situation at the central bank. She's now lost all of her assets overseas. But there's also news that they not only want to sanction her, that they want to prosecute her for war crimes. Does that sound right to you, Michael?
Well, the lady is between the rock and the hard place. Now the Russians are after her and the Ukrainians are after her. Her husband was fired. He was a president of a major university, and apparently he was no longer in favor there. And she is sort of a hostage in her own situation. And now she is accused of collaboration with the annexation of four provinces from Ukraine. So when those provinces were annexed, not by her, by the Russian president, by the Russian parliament, they were annexed into Russia on September the 30th. The next thing, the Russian government said, all right, you're part of Russia. Now you will have to have the Russian currency, the ruble, instead of the Ukrainian currency. And then her technical job was to introduce the Russian currency into those provinces. Now she is accused of financing the war.
And in the summary of where we are 10 months into the war, Michael, everything has come to pass that you identified last February. And I remember asking you, certainly there are economists in the Kremlin who are telling President Putin and his lieutenants that if we do this, here are the consequences. And we're going to lose our revenue. We're going to lose our revenue stream. We're going to lose the ability to maintain our infrastructure. They were told all this. Can we assume that, Michael?
Well, they were told, they were not listened to, and from all the sources we hear is that the president of Russia, Putin, he lives in his own world. Former German Chancellor Angela Merkel said that he lives in the alternative reality.
And so that means that as long as he's the president, Moscow is going to accept the fact that it has no source of revenue in the future. This is a puzzle, Michael. I only ask because you've thought about these things a long time. There's no one planning to go back to using Russia as a supplier of natural gas. And this method of sanctioning Russian oil, that can go on forever, correct? The country's going to plunge into despair. More than a recession, there'll be a complete contraction of the economy, correct?
It will be a complete contraction of the economy, and for 2023, various international organizations are now forecasted to earlier, of course, but they forecast between 1.5% decline of GDP to 7% decline of GDP. But the most important, it will be a fiscal crisis, because they will lose oil and natural gas revenues.
Michael Bernstam, my guide on the sanctions regime that was theoretical in early February of 2022, that is now factual. And the happy news is that someone is making money in it, those very clever Indian traders. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.